What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 78 of Value Town. I'm Chan Man V, and I'm joined today by two guests, some of our favorite players and streamers in the community. Got Sho here from Team Liquid, our resident warrior expert. How's it going, Sho? Oh, I don't hear you, man. There you go. Oh, sorry, we missed you there for a second. What'd you say there?
All right.
There you go.
It's going good. I was a bit tilted earlier.
You're built tilted earlier. I think everybody's tilted a little bit.
Dude, I had the same, dude.
Had the same.
No, but it's all good now.
Normally, it never happens to me on stream.
Well, and then we've got our second, you know, our second salt sun, as we like to say it, since Reno Ray is, I think, the original, the OG. But Super JJ, our rogue expert here. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, we've been talking a lot actually before the show about all kinds of things going on with just the streams and everything, but today's show is going to be a lot of fun. We've got going to talk about an article or a post that Frodan posted a couple days ago, just about the current state of casting and some of the things that he'd like to see just improve and things like that, and I figured it'd be a good discussion. And then we're going to talk about some decks, two top decks that are going on in the meta, as well as just some fun decks that we're working on that are actually, these decks are decent. These aren't even like, you know, super fun decks like we talk about a lot of times on the show. So you could actually climb with some of the decks that we will be talking about. And at the end, of course, we'll do some Q&A with you guys, and be sure to tweet your questions to @ChainManV or @ValueTownGG. All right, so our week in Hearthstone, JJ, why don't you start things off, given that, you know, you've had such a great streaming experience, especially today.
I don't know, man. The game can be so triggering if you get, like, it's just like, you know, you want to be in good mood, you stand up, and then you, and when you're like, just got Totemic and Totem Golem, and you're like, fuck this, this stream is over. It's just snowballing every time, man. And when you get salty and you can't do anything about it.
Oh man, Tuskar, seriously. Man, whenever I get Tuskar, man, I just get like healing totems and taunt totems maybe. Never get those totemics or those manatide totems. So I feel you, dude. I definitely feel you. How about you, Sho? Having any fun with Yogg, playing against it or playing?
I'm starting embracing it, so I'm having more fun. It's never fun to play against it, but it's always. It's the most frustrating stuff to.
Uh-oh. I think your mic's cutting out a little bit.
The absolute best card.
Yeah, you need to put your mic closer.
Yeah, I think your mic's not picking up a little bit, so.
How about now? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Definitely hear you now.
So. Yogg is the, it's either the absolute best card or the absolute worst card, and it's always great to play it yourself, but play against it is always frustrating, because I think that's, after Tusk of the Time, that's the most tilting card to play and lose to.
We should rank these now. Okay, so that's two of them. So we were to
pick. Guys. Okay. I have something really good. So okay. This happened to me yesterday, right? So I played against the fucking token Druid. Here we go, right? He has one of these Wisps of the Old Gods there. Plays Yogg. He gets Savage Roar, Bloodlust. on this fucking 1/1 token.
Wait, he got double Bloodlust?
Yeah.
I've never had anything like that happen. Holy crap.
He fucking domes me with this 1 damage token for 20 damage. Yeah.
Oh my god.
I was done, dude. I was done.
Wow. Okay. I can honestly say I don't think I've had a Yogg, you know, played against Yogg or had Yogg have like two spells in a row like that. Two consecutive spells, you know, the same spell. Does that happen to you guys a lot?
Probably has happened a lot. Like, I've died from like 30 life one time. He just played Yogg, hit me 30 damage with like Strike, Feral Rage, and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've had that happen before too. But double Bloodlust, that's another level, man. That's definitely another level.
And then you give it Wind Fury to make it even you.
Wind Fury? Oh my gosh, yeah, that's crazy. All right. Well, I mean, what else have you guys been up to? Any tournaments, any events this week, or maybe something upcoming, getting ready for?
Mm. There is Valencia next week, right? I'm flying to Valencia, yeah, next week. Mm-hmm. And then we have Seed Stories soon. Players are not announced yet, so shouldn't go too deep into that, I guess.
I am announced for Seed Stories, so I can just say I'm actually going to Seed Stories. But I'm not going to Valencia, though.
I mean...
Okay. Seed Story is always a lot of fun, man. You guys been you been to Tech's new place yet?
Yeah, it's super cool.
Most the last time.
Yeah.
Everything was happening.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, the place looks like a definitely huge and always a blast. Obviously with Dennis and those guys. All right, good stuff. How'd you guys finish on the ladder at the end of the season? I know how to trigger, man. I know how to trigger.
Like 110 or
something. Oh no, man.
I had a similar experience.
Really? Like, man.
I was ranked 20 like 12 hours before, so I went to bed. And it always, like, I played on NA, so it always ends at 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. in the morning. Woke up like 4 minutes before. I check my rank. I am ranked 99. Obviously, I have to play. But I just lose.
Oh, this is the rope. This is rope theory,
and
right
I
here.
I just lose.
Yeah.
So I just lose the game. So I didn't get any points, sadly. And I actually needed a lot of points because of last chance qualifier. So kind of sucks. But
man.
Like the decay is so huge. Like I think this season was the most decay I ever decayed. Like from 12 hours before.
Yeah.
That's so insane.
That is. That's actually 70, dropping 70. I think so you were normally safe, right? I mean...
Yeah, but not this season.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You're never safe in Hearthstone. Just
never safe in Hearthstone. Oh, man, the paranoia, the ladder paranoia that happens at the end of seasons is just another level. It just keeps increasing every season. Definitely crazy, man. But, well, anyways, you got one more month, right? I mean... Right, another month before you can can earn some points, get into the next one.
I think I only have six points now.
Yeah.
I need to get like top 50, I think.
Oh, man. Okay.
Top 50 to qualify for prelims or...
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think.
How much points do you think you need?
Like 13?
It was 13 last time, right?
Yeah. Shouldn't get more, right?
That's not including events and stuff, right? You guys go on events and stuff, right? You get some points there, but possibly.
Yeah,
but you can't really rely on that.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I just win them, right, Kappa?
Yeah, JJ just wins them, but for our regular cups, we can't rely on that.
You gotta love it, man. Gotta love it. All right, well, the ladder starts up again, obviously, right now, and sucks that we have to pretty much wait 3 weeks. I know show usually get really, really high just even the first couple weeks and then just kind of ride it through until the very end, but I feel like the first 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks is just kind of like, oh, we're just waiting around. It's like regular season in another sport. It's like, ah, who gives a shit, right? And then we wait until like playoffs for the last week or so, and then it gets like
the first 2 weeks is like you play random stuff, and then you try to start tryharding mid-month or something. Yeah. Try to get a good rank and then start camping.
Yeah, the problem is like if you went to so many... So you can't really play ladder a lot because it's so different to play on ladder or prepare for tournaments. Mm-hmm. Didn't have the time for that.
Yeah. Which brings up an interesting thing too that we talked about a little bit, JJ, in your YouTube show. I wanted to ask you guys, given that show, you know, you're a successful streamer at this point, and JJ, you know, your stream's starting to pick up actually now after... After all this time, no, I'm just kidding. After obviously some huge wins you've had and lots of success that you've had in winning, is it possible to be a top player, like a tournament winning player, and be a successful streamer? Given the schedule, I mean, show, I know you have like really, you know, just strict daily schedules that you stream at.
So you mean just competitor, huh?
Yeah, I mean, just like being a top competitor, you know, just practicing being.
Yeah. It's pretty rough. Like, you can, like, first of all, you have, like, probably 16 hours a day where you don't sleep, right? So you can't, I mean, this is how you do it, right?
Yeah.
So you can't possibly, like, practice all 16 hours. So I can effectively, when I practice like with Stan or a live course, some other guys, it's just like, maybe if I hardcore practice like 4 to 5 hours, we are already like super exhausted because you go really in depth analysis. And you have like 10 mm-hmm. hours left, right? Like, it's just like, what do you do with this time? You will not practice effectively. Maybe take a break and can practice more. But mm-hmm. yeah, I think it's just smart to combine both. Like, if you, and it also, like, the streaming also, you make the most part of the living. Like, you get sponsored and yeah. stuff from the stream, right? And you also want to give back the community something. That was also a really big part for me. Like these people who always supported me in the beginning when I had like 500 viewers all the time, like mm-hmm. if I had a high amount of viewers or like just 100 viewers, these people helped me getting into that. And I always want to give back something like this. So it will, for me, probably never be a point. And I really don't know many people who can do that. Maybe Stan is the only one in Osaka. Like, these are maybe the two people who I remind.
That can just never. Not stream, you mean, and do super well at tournaments? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, maybe if you get like, yeah. Mm-hmm. But okay.
Show, what do you think? I mean, you again, like, you have these blocks of streaming time where, you know, you do nothing but stream. How does that impact your, I guess, your skill level in terms of Hearthstone?
I mean, obviously, if I stream, I will not get the ideal practice. I will not be the best Hearthstone player I could be. Like, I would just try hard, practice with other players all day. Obviously, I would have a better because the practice on ladder is not the best, like, as it could be. Mm-hmm. And also, like, when you stream, you're not focusing game, like, 100% every time. So the practice is very inefficient. Sense, but it's still practice. Like, you still get to learn the deck well, and you like it's. If like I would say it's efficient enough to play high level, but it's never gonna make you the best player. I would say, like, or the best player you can possibly be.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. Right. It's like
perfect. Yeah, but from the
but also like streaming is also more fun. In a sense, so because okay. streaming is more fun, you can put in more hours. So mm-hmm. in that sense, maybe you play more. So mm-hmm. you kind of learn more, but it's not as if it.
So in terms of, I guess in terms of the progression, you know, with making a living as a Hearthstone player, is having a large stream pretty much the end game here for Hearthstone players? Or do you think it's still possible that Hearthstone competitive, like, tournaments and things will get to a point where at least the prize money will be big enough that, you know, guys like Osaka and those, you know, like the Stan that you mentioned can make a good living?
But these guys, like, it's like really like Osaka, we have to win the World Championship.
Well, okay, barring the World Championship.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty rough, right?
Yeah, but do you see a time where the tournaments will get there? Of course, right now it's not. I mean, I don't think the prize money is enough that we could sustain a lot of players. But do you think it'll ever get there?
Depends how Hearthstone progresses. Like, and at the moment, Hearthstone is just progressing really well, and Blizzard is just backing it up really well. The new expansion mm-hmm. is awesome, right? I didn't expect it to be that good. The community is growing bigger, and I think the prize pool is twice as much this time at BlizzCon. Mm-hmm. And also, if I look at tournaments, like this summer, there are so many tournaments, and the prize pools are getting bigger and bigger, right? Like, I think there are like now 4 DreamHacks. With all of them, your first place gets 8K instead of just one really big DreamHack, like DreamHack mm-hmm. Summer and DreamHack Winter. So I think it can get there, yes. But also you have to see, I think the big money tournaments will also be, you will get invited in there because you have a community around you and people want to see you, right?
Right.
And that's how it is.
Well, it's always been the invitational thing, right? But recently, I have to say, I feel like there's more and more open tournaments nowadays. And to mm-hmm. some extent, I don't think we see that as... Part of me feels like I don't think we see enough of the invitationals nowadays, which is kind of a crazy statement. Okay. But there are times where it's like, you know, I'd like to see you versus just, you know, some of the other, you know, more notable people are just playing each other versus having open tournaments that have a lot of names that a lot of people don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it's always nicer to see someone you know or you see in stream or you have some kind of like relationship with, in a way.
Relationship?
What's the word I'm looking for? Not relationship. Some kind of like...
Your fans, or your
like so, you play someone on ladder, for example. You're familiar with the name at least. Like if it's two complete randoms, mm-hmm. I would never watch it. But if it's like JJ against a random, that's much more interesting because I would like to see either if I don't like JJ, I would like to see him lose, or if I like him, I would like him to win. And at the same time, this other guy can actually surprise me.
Yeah,
play really well, and then I would be, oh shit, he's actually good, and I would keep his name in my memory, and I would remember him for the next time he plays, and I would be hyped for the next time he plays.
Ooh,
but when it's like two complete randoms, I would never watch it.
I see something interesting in chat, like somebody saying like all streamers losing viewers, the big ones, Colentro, Strife, Grimas. But I think this is like, I really want to answer this question because I think it's super interesting.
Okay.
Sure. I think it's different. I think it's more like there are more bigger, more known streamers now. Like it's just splitting up more. That's how I feel.
Yeah, but, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. I think that there is a little, like you said, just more streams to watch. There are just more, you know, different streamers that people enjoy too. So you really have to choose. And sometimes two of your favorite streamers are streaming at the same time. And unless you dual stream, which some people do, multi-stream or whatever, you know, just have two windows up or just have, you know, the website that you can watch both. For the most part, you have to choose one or the other. But also, I think there is a slight... I think that the streaming numbers have gone down a little bit in Hearthstone just because of other games too, like Overwatch coming out or whatever other popular game comes out too, that just takes the attention for a little bit, you know? But still, I mean, Hearthstone is still top four on Twitch. So it's doing fine. Hearthstone's not going anywhere.
What do you think about that show?
I think Sean is right that, and you're right about... people have more to choose from now, and it's this up. But also, like right now, or in the beginning of All Gods, see a real rise in views. Like always in the beginning of a new expansion, it's always a rise, and then it kind of lowers down up until the next expansion.
Now
it's in middle ground. So right now it's like. Stable, but I think at the end of the right before the next expansion, at its lowest again.
Yeah, but when is the next expansion coming? 2 weeks?
I know it should be. It should be pretty soon. I would think maybe a month and a half. I would say.
Except four expansions a year, right? Four expansions a year, right?
So maybe a month and a half, 2 months. So we're probably halfway through. At least maybe a little bit past the midpoint for the next expansion. But yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you there, Asho. I think it does have a lot to do with it. Have you seen your numbers? How have your numbers been? I feel like your numbers have been pretty consistent even just for the last year. You know, it's been pretty steady.
Like I had, like right before the expansion, I had an average of 2,000. But I also played different games because I wasn't that... hyped about Hearthstone at that point.
Yeah.
So and also it reflected, like people could see that, people saw that I didn't really enjoy it as much, and people don't like that. I mean, they enjoy it more when I'm actually enjoying the game.
Yep.
And right when the expansion came out, I started liking it again, and I've been streaming like almost every. It's been going well for me.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think again, Hearthstone. I think it's doing fine. Streaming wise, it's still doing good. And the top streamers, I think, still get a healthy amount. I mean, Crypt still gets ridiculous amounts, like every time he streams.
Yeah, Crypt is so almost amazing. He's putting up so much content. I think he does so much time, dude.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good example of just like hitting it huge when old gods came out and maintaining it basically the last 2 months. So
I even think like when he streams, Hearthstone is at its peakest, like in category wise. Like it's always
that's like late. Peakest. Really? You think that's like super late at night too?
Yeah, streams. But it's like at sometimes it's not like he has like 30k sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And some point of the day, that's not even like the total amount isn't even that number. So he probably brings in like people that really don't really watch Hearthstone, but also watch mm-hmm. only watch him.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
that's amazing because that time slot used to be the worst time slot that he, you know, was in, or close to it. Maybe a few hours before the worst, the graveyard shift, right? At least the people in the U.S. would call. So if you think that Hearthstone is actually at its highest during that time, that's an awesome. That's really different than what it used to be, because the daytime used to be the most competitive, where we'd have, you know, just all the Trumps and the Mods and all the stuff just streaming at the same time. You guys, you know, in Europe streaming early too. So that's pretty interesting. if it is indeed, he probably has like 90-95% of all viewers during that time slot, because mm-hmm. it's pretty slow during that time. Yeah, exactly. All right, well, why don't we move on? We talked a lot about that. So let's talk about some casting here. Frodan came out with this article. Let me show you guys. It's a really good article. Frodan, bless his heart, man. He's always doing some great things, and this particular thing was basically the second post, really talking about the current state of casting. And if you didn't read the previous one, what he does is he kind of goes in, really analyzes what's going on with casting, and even, you know, for himself as well as the other casters, and what trends are happening and what, you know, he feels like needs to happen. And, you know, Frodan's perfect person, I feel like, to analyze this. And he's, you know, these articles are very well thought out. So yet another one that he wrote here, which was, you know, casting call number two, as you can see. But kind of wanted to go through it just kind of point by point. If you guys haven't read it, let me link it to you guys in the chat. And for the audio listeners, I'll definitely link it to in on the webpage so you can check that out. But he starts off by really summing up just all the things that are good, you know, just kind of what happened actually after his last post, which is talking about like establishing narratives and things like that, and how, you know, casting has improved from there. But he starts listing, you know, kind of points that need to, need to improve. And the first thing that he talks about is really the fact that it's hard for casters to differentiate top players, since there's a lot of new faces now, right? Like when we're talking about HCT, we do get like maybe one or two, sometimes even three of people that repeat each season, you know, like from the winter season to the spring season. But for the most part, you know, we do see like a large number of new faces in terms of the top eight. What do you guys think of that? I mean, it definitely makes it hard for casters to, you know, establish some kind of narrative, and just for the spectators and show, like you were just talking about how if it's just two random people, you just don't want to watch. So what's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, this NA, I actually didn't watch. I just knew Napoleon.
So you just, right. Yeah, Napoleon was from last time, right? So, yeah.
But I tried to watch when he was playing, but other than that, it wasn't very interesting for me. But, like, I know, like, Napoleon from either Twitch, he's a lot, and also from Ladder, so mm-hmm. that gives me like some kind of sense of, oh, let's see how good it is, like how we can play on pressure. It's very interesting to see a familiar face from internet, how he is in real life, you know. It's interesting, but if it's two complete randoms, it's not so interesting.
Okay, well,
unless
we're gonna,
someone is really really hyped up by the mm-hmm. casters and says, oh my god, this new up and coming player is good.
Mm-hmm.
Then it might give me some kind of attention on those games, but otherwise.
I mean, with Napoleon, how much of it was really his play versus like the mannerism and just all the, you know, buzz going on around that? You know, people wanting to watch that.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting for sure.
Dude, it was hilarious. So, it was actually
special, right? Like, yeah. It's always exciting to see something like that happen. It does, like, because it's so, I mean, it's so special in a way, right?
Yeah.
Because you never know what's going to happen, really.
Exactly. So, all right, JJ, what do you think about this?
About the whole, take the article as a whole?
Or, no, just that particular point, which is, you know, right now, the casters have to cast these players that, you know, that a lot of people don't know, or the spectators don't know, and the community is always kind of pointed at the casters. It's like your responsibility to, like, make me like these people, you know, and I don't know how fair that is, actually.
I mean, the thing is, like, this is what Blizzard choose for this year's BlizzCon trip, right? So casters basically have to adapt to that, or they're getting fucking burned and never cast again. So that's their job at that point. It's also what we as competitive players have to realize, right? It's not the caster's fault. They make them cast like that also, kind of. So is that good? That is a different question, right? Is it a good idea on praising these players? I think it's kind of
I guess a better question maybe is, do you think overall the production, HCT production and the casters are doing like as good a job as they can do trying to make it interesting?
I think it's getting stale. I think it's just straight up like, yeah, it's kind of, we have some really good casters there and some really disappointing. Like, sometimes we just drop in some random guy. What it was, Frank Lepore or something. I was like, what the fuck? Like, literally, like, yeah. I think he had no clue what he was talking about. And then we have, like, some super amazing casts, like, Subtle, and Frodan is also, like, always summing it up, like, also making it pretty entertaining for viewers. You have to really make... I think these caster teams they have now, like, they have a really good, like, roster by now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I feel like they've solidified this roster. And Frank, I mean, throwing in Frank, so, I mean, it's good to get new names in there, or else we wouldn't have had, like, the Subtle.
Yeah, but he has at least to understand Kara. The game.
Okay, all right, fair enough. But he does have media. I mean, you can tell he's done media before, but yes. We'll be talking about caster knowledge in just a second, all right? So that's one of the bullet points. So you think they're doing, I mean, given the players that they have, you think they're doing a pretty good job of just trying to, I mean, they do interviews, right, on the production. They try to do these B-rolls, right, trying to get to know the players. You think that's working to an extent, or... could the players do more? I mean, what do you guys think?
I think they should list up like achievements of each player in some sort.
I think that'd be good.
Because like you have no idea if let's say someone is really good at ladder, a lot of people don't know that and think that up like, oh, this guy is like top 10 in ladder finishes overall or something like this. That's actually extra. Like, that hypes the player up.
Yeah.
I was laughing so hard at some point where I had these statistics.
Oh my gosh. What? It must be real funny.
Some guy had like 48 win percentage on ladder and they just say to his name and was like, yeah, that's an achievement.
Wait, 48%? What?
He made it to this point with 48%. And I was like, that's something you want to show on stream.
Yeah, that's terrible, man. Yeah. That's like,
I'm not sure how you climb ladder winning 48% of the time on ladder.
He must have been a tavern hero, right? No way you could get like top 100 with 48%.
It's
impossible. Yeah, definitely impossible. Unless you had some super quality wins because matchmaking was just extremely terrible. So that brings up the second bullet, which is no statistics. I mean, there's basically no statistics for casters, and sometimes they get them wrong, possibly, given that what Super JJ said. I think you probably could dig really deep to find, you know, just how many times they've been in top 100 legend, you know, like you're saying, show.
There is a site for that. I can find it in 2 minutes. I forgot the name of it, but mm-hmm. there is actually a site. Do you know it, JJ?
What?
The site that tells you, like, I guess...
Crane told me, but I don't know.
Okay, so there is one. Now, there is a site. It'd be interesting. Yeah, yeah. Anybody in chat has it. Like, definitely let
me
know.
They should just change the achievements. Like, I think they didn't really think about the achievements they're trying to show on stream. They should just change the achievement roster. We want to show, like, top 100 legend is, like, super amazing. You can at least, like, see some consistency, which on ladder is also worth something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, was he at some dream hacks participating, or... Has his results also been like mediocre, not always like he's the new superstar, right? That's something that's interesting for me.
What, that he's just lucky that he's in the top 8 for the most part?
No, but they show the real results and not just right. Praise them to fucking
yeah.
here.
Yeah, yeah. I hear yeah. you there. That's one of the points I actually do in this article, is that I think the casters have been in praise mode a little bit too much.
Yeah, or they could just talk to the player, like, what's your favorite deck? And they could just say, like, for example, for JJ, it has always been the talking point that he's a rogue expert, and they mm-hmm. always emphasize so much on it. And then whenever JJ plays rogue, you're really hyped for that, right? If you're, like, interested in that class. For example, like, new ability, he's, like, a good guy, and like what their best deck are, basically what yeah. they are expert at. That's also interesting, for example. Right. And if they play that in their lineup or whatever.
Well, I guess that's a way to characterize the guys, right? Like, instead of just focusing on personality with these interviews, which they have been trying, then you kind of create this Hearthstone personality by you know, calling out whether he's a specialist in something. And that's actually a good point, Sho.
That's super cool. That's a super amazing idea, yeah.
Yeah, I think they should do that more too. It's definitely a tough challenge. I mean, you basically have to create a character in some ways. You know, that it takes creativity, especially when you don't know these people. So
it's so sad for me at some point, because you have so many ways to do that, and I feel like they kind of choose the worst one by just praising everyone, just mm-hmm. instead of just putting, like, you have so many ways to, like, make players attractive, and they choose just the easiest one, for my opinion.
Yeah. Caster game knowledge. So you obviously mentioned Frank earlier. One thing that Frodan says is that, you know, a lot has to do with just casters, you know, knowing the game well enough, instead of just having these general, these general phrases, like, you know, Druids need ramp, you know, or rogue with coin and combo kind of cards are really good. And a lot of times the casters kind of go into that mode. So there's not really anything in depth that's being said. And eventually I feel like, you know, the spectators or all of us viewers, it just kind of starts sounding the same to us, especially from caster to caster. So in terms of the caster knowledge right now, what do you guys think? Like, do you guys, I mean, obviously I would think that you guys appreciate casters that have the most knowledge, like players. Are those the favorite type of casters that you like to listen to right now? Sho?
Well, there need to be a balance. I think you need to have someone who can talk a lot, and also someone next to him that is good at the game. So if it's a good mix, another broadcaster, caster and a that's the best way to go with it.
Okay, so you still think there should be like a more play-by-play or just kind of transitional also, guy and then an analyst?
Yeah, there should be a play-by-play, but there should also be knowledge. But to be honest, like, it's very hard for casters to... Like, it's very important for the caster not to... If they are going to bash someone, they have to be correct about it. Right. Like, if they say right. this guy sucks, he's doing the right play, wrong play here, and they are actually wrong, that is the worst thing that can happen. Or the other way around, that he says he's doing a really good play here, doing this blah blah blah, but it's actually incorrect. That is the worst thing that can happen. Then basically lie to the viewer that this guy is actually bad or good. So
I mean,
go ahead. You have to be really good. Like, you have to be respectful. And there's actually a lot of good casters. he's like, he got like top 100 last season. And I have heard some of his casts where he talked, like, I remember talked about like Controlled Warrior versus Murloc Paladin. And he was really on point on everything. Like, he understood the matchup. Who from the Warriors' perspective, very, very good.
Yeah, who was it? You broke up a little bit when you were talking about
Asuma Cutie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love him as well. He's like, he's actually
TJ. We're talking about TJ, I guess.
TJ. Because he actually plays as well. Like, he's a high level player, so he understands. Like, when he plays enough, he will understand the matchup, like we do. So you would respect his opinion as a player. Most of the times, like, he's not always right, of course. Like even like top players aren't always right, but most of the times, right. And also Frodan, even though Frodan, like, he doesn't play the meta decks. Like, if he would like play the meta decks and try as a player, it would increase his knowledge. Like, he would be a really good knowledgeable caster. Lothar as well and Savish, they have both been pro players, but if they have to play game as well, and there's not enough time. Like, how could you possibly cast full time and be a pro player full time? It's so hard. It's very hard to be very critical as a caster if you don't back it up, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the paranoia that I think casters have to go through, right? And that's kind of why it's kind of led down this more generic route where you're only saying good things and you're not, you know, taking that risk because you're just so afraid of being wrong and how that looks and just, you know, just all that good stuff. So I mean, you nailed the nail on the head there with that. JJ, you about to say something?
I like perfect, like how he said it as well.
Yeah,
just like
exactly.
the mix is so important. Like, you have like somebody who's more talkish and somebody's super. Like, I like what is happening at the moment. Like, you see it more often now. Like, you have like one player cast because Firebat is getting in and there. And when you have somebody like Nimsh, it's so good. Or Frodan. It's so good to have somebody like Firebat on the desk who's actually a world champion. And you're like, yes, this guy has a clue. And we have like another guy who keeps the show together. It's so nice to watch. I really love it. And this is just something I want to see. And
yeah, when you have the right combo, it's definitely really good. And man, Hearthstone casting is so different than any other esport. You know, I do agree that there should be like a color guy or a guy that's more of like the host caster, I guess you could describe them. Mm-hmm. And then there's a guy who's usually a player, right? The analyst. But I think Hearthstone is one of those things where it's like it requires more from the analyst and it requires more from the host caster too. The host caster has to have more game knowledge, like definitely than other games, and then even the analyst has to have more personality too, because there's a lot of just like, you know, goofy talk and just, you know, non-Hearthstone talk that
I'm also
has
kind
to
of sad.
On.
And I also kind of sad, like, if these people are casting, like, if Firebat is casting, nobody knows this guy is actually world champion. Why? Like, why do we not just show something like this on the cast? Like, I don't have a clue why you don't do that. Like, this guy is a world champion, right? He won the BlizzCon, and we're like, oh, it's just a caster guy. Like, why don't they also personalize the cast like that? It's pretty sad for me.
I mean, forget just casting. I mean, it's just generally title holders, like world champion. I mean, how many times do we use the world champion term for Firebat these days? It's like very rare. There's probably a good number of people that don't even know that he was the first world champion. So I think that's a general issue in the community right now with, you know, whether it's historic achievements or it's even ranking system. And that kind of leads back to the whole statistics. You know, there's no ranking system. It's just like HCT ratings, rankings, and there are different regions, and we have to go by that. We've talked a little bit about that already on the show in the past, but it continues to be an issue, unfortunately, and it makes it difficult, again, for our casters to you know, make these guys interesting for everybody. So do you think they should be calling out bad plays more? I mean, you said it's risky, Sho, and I mean, we've seen people make, you know, say wrong things on in other broadcasts, like other games, other sports and stuff like that before. But it's because the reputation, you know what I mean? Like the reputation of the person saying it has a lot to do with it. So even if they're wrong sometimes, it can be okay. You know, like if Firebat says something wrong, I think it's fine, actually, if he says something that might be wrong, you know, just because, again, like he's already proven how good of a player he is. But generally, do you think they should be calling stuff out more?
They probably should. It would be more interesting for sure. But like you said, it's very risky, right? Like it could also backfire a lot in a way. I mean, you should probably, like, for example, RDU, when he cast, he's like,
RDU is savage, very, dude. Savage.
He's not very political, right? At all.
No, like he just not. Says this gets sucked, right?
Yeah.
If you're a procaster, you probably should say, oh, maybe he's also add like he played bad here, but also it's his first tournament. Most people don't play as their like A game when they play the first tournament or nervous here. Right. You know, be a little like not too harsh, you know.
Because I mean,
if you bash someone too much, it just feels bad, right?
I mean, you're not there to bash someone on stream, right? That's not what we are talking about. I guess it's more about like if you're allowed to call them out, not just praise them. Like this is the thing. I think it's allowed about how you tell it, or how you describe the situation. So it's like, yeah, maybe the situation like this was maybe or probably the better play overall, or maybe he saw an other line, but. Not just say, oh, it's perfect what he did, man. He just traded his 7-7 into 1-1 minion. Like, he's just amazing. Like, he's just
he's so good. He's so good.
He actually takes the board, and you're like, yeah. this is not like this.
Yeah, I think one point that Froden makes in the article too is that you know, not calling out people. That makes all the players just kind of seem at the same level too, right? And that's an issue that we have. It's just like why is this player better than the other player? And having to call out some misplays, I mean that's kind of different. Starts to at least make the viewer or the spectator understand the differentiation of maybe the skills of these players, or just the, you know, the minute difference, right? That this player might be just a tiny bit better because of this play. So yeah, I think that needs to happen, and I mean, some of the casters, I think some of the casters probably actually, you know, are just holding back, even though they would be right, I think, more times than not, if they were to say something, and it's just a matter of doing that. Another thing that Frodan mentions here is really affirming your authority as a caster, and I think that's what leads to just the confidence in being able to do that, which is... you know, finishing super high on ladder, you know, just like showing the viewers that, you know, you do know what you're doing, you know, you do know, you know, have knowledge, and having the production be able to show that in some way so that the spectator trusts you, you know, like they know that you, what you're saying is probably right because you're a top level player. And we're starting to see that. You mentioned TJ. TJ finished, I think, top 25 this last ladder, you know, or at least
that's so amazing.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's crazy. And he did it with his own deck as well. That's even more crazy.
Yeah, that is it. The Zoo deck, right?
Yeah, the Yogg-Zoo, whatever. Crazy. I haven't tried it.
Freaking madness, oh, Zoo deck.
It's fucking.
I lost like 5 straight times in that deck when I tried it, man. It was not good for me. So kudos to him for being able to do that. That's amazing. But I bet
there's like a lot of good casters actually, for sure. Like Admirable, for example. He's also one of those. Like he's a player caster, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he plays a lot of aggro decks, but still, he finishes top 100. So he knows what he's doing with the aggro decks.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes it's, you know, obviously what you say and the actuality of it is very important, but a little bit has to do with just perception too. So the community needs to like feel that, oh, all right, you know, you are the analyst, you know what you're talking about. And I bet there's some people that don't know TJ's that great of a player, honestly, because he normally is like the host caster on the panel. So you know, again, like the host panel, the host guys, they need to, you know, they need to definitely have that knowledge too. Frodan's finished top 100 too, like a few times, and he always gets legend in every single region, or he's done it like once or twice, just legend in every region just within a month. So yeah, he's definitely completely capable and knowledgeable too of the game. But yeah, anyways, any last thoughts just on the article in general, just general casting, what we need? I mean, how about just throwing some ideas out? What do we need? Do we need...
First of all, we need guys like Frodan, who's like already in a super good position to make RNG. This is something I respect like super high. Like, he just wants to make the community better, the game better. This, like, this is so amazing, like having somebody in his position writing these articles. Like, first of all, this is what we need, right? People like him, like being still critical about the scene or about casting and stuff. This is like what makes things better, right? Mm-hmm. And he's just riding on his cloud and having a happy time. That's actually
right.
Yeah,
I think it's absolutely. Yeah, I mean, he in some ways, you know, he's trying to make his, you know, his competitors better in a way, right? And I think a lot of people look at it like that instead of looking at it, like you said, like as a community, and really just trying to better the product or better the Hearthstone production and just the Hearthstone community generally. So he's always been like that. I mean, Frodan's always had the community on his mind and been generous in that standpoint, and an ambassador for Hearthstone. So yes, we need more people like that, absolutely. Sho, what about you? Any comments or any last thoughts or things that we need to add or we should see in casting?
Yeah, probably more, like you said, like more critical. But you said you need to be able to respect the caster as well, because just look foolish.
Yeah,
like Frank Kappa would
Poor Frank.
That would look silly, you know.
Yeah.
There have been people before him. It's just he's just the recent one.
Yeah. and actually, one last comment too about that is just that I think one, I wouldn't say lazy way, but one way that people have been trying to do it just really quickly is just to have a player, like a pro, come in and cast. And that's not the right way to do it too. Like, you know, we need people who are media trained too, or can cast well. So the people that can cast well need to work on it, you know, on their just game knowledge and building up that way. So
Most of the players are media trained since they're streaming as well. So whereas it's pretty easy.
Well, dude, just because you're streaming doesn't mean you're media trained. All right, I don't know that.
But you're kind of right. You're
used to being in front. You're used to being in front of people, but not necessarily articulating plays and, you know, in a very professional atmosphere, right? It's
also you say we are not professional.
No, I'm saying like in a casting when you're casting with another person. I see, JJ. Oh man, you can call me out the first event that you cast, and you can just say, just eat it, Jan Man. Just suck it, Jan Man.
He doesn't take us serious.
No. All right.
He doesn't take us serious.
No. All right. Well, enough non-Hearthstone talk, or at least non gameplay talk. Why don't we talk about some decks? And why don't we talk about some top meta decks? We always start off doing that, kind of talking about decks that are actually good, that are really good in terms of tournaments or the ladder meta. And the first one we're going to talk about is one that Frozen wrote a guide for. He used, I think, Hoge's Reno Nazoth deck, a Warlock deck here, and was able to get number one on the Legend Ladder with it. So I figure, you know, we would just take a look at it. For those of you listening on audio, I know this part is really tough, so I'll try to name a few. It's a very standard, you know, Reno lock that you typically see. Obviously, there's Nazoth in the deck. But from the standpoint of death rattles, I would say the only one that stands out, or the two of them that stand out, is really Harvest Golem and Cairn, you know, from that's abnormal from your typical Reno lock deck. So
maybe Possessed Villager.
Oh, Possessed Villager maybe. Too. Yeah. That's a good point too.
I don't know. There's not even York in this deck. I don't like it.
You don't like it? Actually, that'd be probably easy to replace one card with Yogg, and it'd just be freaking dank as hell. But no, but what do you guys think about this deck? I mean, I saw his guide, and I've actually played it some. It seems weak against aggro decks, but seems to work well against what the very tempo based mid range decks that we see, like Warriors and Dragon Warriors, Tempo Warriors, and things like that. Thoughts on it? JJ, I'll have you go first.
I like how the deck is built overall. I like this was first, like, I usually didn't like the Endsoth variants, but like the Possessed Villager and the Harvest Cone give you like some early game and help you to stall to Reno better, keep the board up, and you still have really good win conditions. Like, actually, I really like how he built the deck. I think this is like one of the master creations of the last season. And thumbs up to Frozen there.
It's actually Hoj's deck, I think, not Frozen.
Hoj's deck? Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, Hoj is also,
yeah,
yeah, also one of the underrated players. So thumbs up there and hitting rank one. I think this deck was, that was the deck you could get rank one legend at the end of the season with.
What about you, Sho? What do you think?
Yeah, I tried this a bit. What I like about it, compared to like a combo Reno Lock, it has more proactive stuff. A lot of times when you played like the combo Reno Lock, there was like turn 5, turn 6, where you just tapped and you passed. So you couldn't, like, even if you cleared the board with the Hellfire the turn before, couldn't capitalize on the advantage you got. Because you would just tap and do nothing because you had a hand with only reactive cards.
Right.
This deck has more proactive stuff, like that it can just drop. There's no Leroy, there's no Faceless. That's what I like about it. As you see at all the stats, he's farming the warriors. So I'm not sure about his stats though. Like 13-2 against Dragon Warrior, 86%. That seems crazy to me.
I told you. You didn't believe me.
But, I mean, the sample size is low, but, I mean,
that's pretty crazy,
it says that it's favored, for sure. And that's very important, because Dragon Warrior is the new cancer deck that everyone plays, and you need to beat that deck if you want to
come. God, I hate this deck so much.
Wait, the Dragon Warrior deck, or you mean this deck?
No, Dragon Warrior.
Okay, Dragon Warrior, I was going to say. Okay, yeah.
Already. Binder, I'm just out and just quitting the game.
Golly, is that bad for you? I definitely agree that. I mean, I climbed like a crap load with that deck too. It's definitely very straightforward to play, and a deck like this isn't quite as straightforward a lot of times. So if you're trying to farm warrior, this is definitely, whether it's control or it's tempo, this deck has a huge advantage. It's 90-10. His stats are 90-10 against C'Thun warrior and control warrior.
It's pretty crazy, yeah. But it makes sense.
You run into Sho, this is what you play, guys. This is exactly what you play. But if you're running against like a lot of aggro and things like that, definitely shy away from it, because it definitely is not the best thing in the world. All right, next up we've got a quest. Oh, we got the Questing Miracle. So we talked a little bit about this last week with Firebat, but given that we have, you know, Mr. Rogue Expert Super JJ here, he wanted to talk about it a little bit more too. So for those of you not familiar with this deck, it has the miracle package, your standard, you know, questing adventure with a lot of the spells. The things that really stand out are obviously the Gadgetzan is what I meant, with just the draw capability. The thing that stands out is the end game is Questing Adventures, some crazy combo with Questing and Conceal and all that good stuff. All right, how does this compare, JJ, to all the other miracle finishes, whether it's combo, Malygos, just all the
It's probably ones. Better than Malygos and the other, but it's still a meme, dude. Like, it's still a meme. I mean, seriously, I mean, we are memeing here, right? This is not a real deck.
Okay. Well, Amnesia got to number 5 with it, right? So it actually,
he high-rolled the shit. I watched this. although he's pretty smart and a good player, and he did the right play, so he high-rolled the shit out of this deck. I hit rank 1 legend with Malygos Rogue when it was not supposed to hit the rank 1 legend. It's just, yeah, it can happen, man.
You can have a super hot streak, I guess is what you mean.
Yeah, but it's super fun. It's super fun. Like, you just bump these questing adventurers up to death wings, and then you have fun.
It's like you have 3 Van Cleaves. Like,
yeah,
you go all
exactly.
In on.
Right.
You have 3 Van Cleaves to go all in on instead of 1.
So, I mean, is this good in the mirror then? I mean, would you want this deck against.
Definitely.
Yeah, right?
Definitely worse. Like in the mirror, he just Leroy's you to death. Yeah.
I was just thinking, you know, Van Cleave is usually like a pretty big play, like in the mirror, at least early all ins, I guess. But Questing Adventure isn't quite like that though. Like crazy all ins. Like Van Cleave is probably double that. Okay. So I guess not much to talk about this then. I don't know why you told me to talk about this then. If you like, you're not going to say much about it.
I wanted to bash it on stream, dude.
I told you we talked about this last week, so. Okay, cool. No problems. No problems. All right, why don't we talk about some fun decks then? The other meta decks, guys, is just like Dragon. I mean, a lot of the top meta decks are ones that, you know, Aggro Shaman and Dragon decks and things like that.
I think we should touch on the Druids. The Yogg Druid a little.
Like, oh, okay. You want to talk about Yogg Druid? Okay, we can do that. Actually, I'm gonna have to find a pick of it. Why don't you talk some Yogg Druid while I get a pick of it real quick.
What do you think, JJ?
What do you think about Yogg the Yogg Druid? We're talking about Jackie's version. Are we talking about Jackie's version? Or are we talking about more of a?
If you show me the deck first, I have it easier. I think.
God. All right, let me see. Let me grab it. Hold on. I wasn't ready for this.
Like, the thing is that last season, like, there was a lot of top 100 finishes with exactly this deck. Sixo got rank 1 with it.
Yeah,
so I think it's, like, new in the meta, so...
Let me pull it up. There's different versions of it, so there's one that's more reliant on the combo.
Most people got the high finish with the 7th class list.
I mean, Yogg Druid, I play it also, but like the normal, like seventh class list.
Oh, actually, let me link you this article. It's in this article. You can check it out.
Okay. It's not even a meme deck, right? It's just actually
It's good. I mean, yeah, I think it started off as like a concept deck, but I think it's actually good now.
Yeah. I think it's actually, like, I played it also. I think it's not a meme deck. I mean, this might be, like, the new deck to play and also play against on ladder. And it's pretty fun. It's pretty strong. You have a lot of combos, like, especially, like, the Druid Legend of the Fandral is so strong in it. And the token, like, it also got stronger, what you have to realize, because there are not as many good board clears anymore, like Blade Flurry and what else got nerfed. And you got so many.
Let me find it.
And you got so many ways to fill your board again. It's actually crazy. And Raven Idol gives you so much flexibility. It's actually sick.
Yeah, it's like, it obviously relies on Wild Growth and Innervate, it feels like, when I played it. But the strong part about it, I think, it's like. Violet Teacher for sure. Like, Violet Teacher plus a lot of spells and, like, called the +1/+1. Call of the Wild?
Power of the Wild, you mean?
Power of the Wild, yeah. That combo is so good. And it also makes, like, Wild Growth usable late game, where you can, like, turn 10, Violet Teacher, Wild Growth, access mana, get 2 plebs, and then, play more spells, and then you play that card and you have a huge swing turn. Then have the Yogg as well, which
Yogg wins you games, baby. Double bloodlust.
Like when you're behind, it just wins you games where you have no business winning. So like after this deck came out and I saw so many people having it, like Sandblast, Yagut, so probably a lot more people. I got my eyes on Yogg after this day. After this season, yeah. I started respecting Yogg because I thought it was like just a troll card, and like in the beginning it was like people would play it when they had a board lead, and that's not how you should see it.
Yeah.
See it as a card draw or a board removal / board removal. And since people started understanding the card more, it has become an actually good card.
Yeah, in that scenario, it's definitely, like, more times than not going to be beneficial to you by a good amount. What would you think it is? Like, what do you think the percentage is, actually, that if you throw Yogg on a board where, you know, your opponent either has a couple minions on and you have nothing, like a disadvantage board, that you come out ahead?
There is, I think, there was a table I saw. It was 70% when you played 10 spells or something. There is a Yogg table. Give me a second.
I know it's 70%. I know it's 70% that you get something beneficial, right? Something like that.
I found it. Like, it's only a good.
Link it in the chat. That'd be cool.
So I can just link the Yagut's
Twitter. Be right back.
Yeah. Yeah, do that.
Oh, I got banned. I'm not a mod on your channel.
Oh no, just link it in yeah. Let me mod you in this for now.
I can link it on Skype. Yeah, but I only link actual sheets, but if you scroll down like 4 tweets, you would.
Oh, the spreadsheet. Oh wow. This is cool.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, actually. Definitely. Here you go, guys, in the chat. Check this out. And let me see if I can show it too. I can't really see it though. It's really small. But apparently there's a spreadsheet here that shows, I guess, the probability that you'll be getting something. It's hard to see. There we go. This may be a little bit better. Oh, okay. So the probability that you'd be drawing cards from a deck. Wow, this is crazy. Depending on how many spells you had casted. So depending on how many spells that Yogg-Saron actually casts here, it gives you a percentage of how much you restore health or to face drawing from deck. And this is all based on his statistics, right? This is looks like
I'm not sure who made this actually.
Okay, maybe it's a combination, but wow, this is cool. It's definitely cool.
Yeah, the table is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, that's Yogg-Saron's definitely amazing here. And we first talked about it when Jackie was on the show like 6 weeks ago or something like that. And you know, he got to number two. I'm kind of showing his right now, which is number two. I think it has been modified a little bit since then, just a tiny bit, not much actually. What do you think the key cards are? I mean, Wisps of the Old Gods. I mean, you said Violet Teacher for one. Do you think Soul of the Forest is any good? Or any of those type of cards?
I don't think Pamphlet played those cards. Mm-hmm. Played more, like the card he played was like Thundrel. Thundrel is Fandral. Key card.
Yeah, for sure.
Then Violet Teachers, Wild Growth, and Innervate.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the, like, on cards.
Yeah. We've definitely seen it some in HCT too. I think all three of the regions, we had at least three people bring this deck. So, you know, not only is it like a good deck in ladder, it's definitely a competitive deck too. That's quite good. What are the great matchups? You guys played it enough to know?
I know Dragon Warrior is bad, so.
Yeah, Dragon Warrior is definitely bad.
That's kind of bad, but otherwise it has like quite a good matchup against everything.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's how I felt like as well. Just decent over the board.
Yeah.
It'll take quite bad against Warrior, I think. Like Warrior with Double Brawl, Revenge.
Hmm. Yeah, it definitely has the ability to clear the board pretty consistently, right? Just with all the different ghouls and just the different Warrior package that you always get. So yeah, that could be tough. So something that you, I don't know, might not be that great on ladder. I mean, you'd have to definitely grind on ladder given that there's so many warriors. But if you're at an event and you're banning warrior, this deck's pretty good. This deck is definitely a solid one. It's one that it takes, at least my experience with this deck, you'll have to play like a good 10-20 games before you really get a good feel of it, unless you read a guide or something like that, and I think you can pick up how to play the deck faster, but it takes a little time to learn on your own actually how to play it at a high level. All right, well, cool. Yeah, definitely great to bring that up. Why don't we talk about some fun decks here. And we'll start off with Show brought a Lock and Load deck here. So Yogg Lock and Load. Yes, man. This is like what I definitely played a lot of this maybe, I don't know, a month or two ago. And great times. Definitely a lot of fun times playing this deck. So what are your thoughts on it, man?
It has potential for sure. But I think it was weak to. Wait, let me see the stats. Like I was high rolling the first 2 days, so I had like 80% win rate.
Wow!
So I thought, oh my god, this is the best deck, new best deck. And then the other day, I was tanking with it. So
every day.
Then you just started throwing all spells, right? And it's just like fuck. Yeah.
Obviously, like Call of the Wild, that card is just that's what makes Hunter really strong.
Yeah, no matter what Hunter it is, it always has some kind of, you know, just consistent burst finish at the end.
It's just Brokeback.
it is Brokeback.
And then you have, like, in this specific version, you have no early minions, so you will win your joust from the elephant a lot of times. So that's like 2 mana, 3/2, draw a card, which is insane. And then you have like the survival cards, like a lot of spells early the game to try to minimize lives for mid game. So you have a power shot, which is aggressive meta, like it basically crushes Sue. That card alone.
Yeah. Your explosive trap.
And then the bow is really good in this deck. So basically, you mulligan for the elephant, the bow, and animal companion. All the proactive stuff, because you will get the reactive stuff eventually.
this is pretty interesting. Like the version I played way back when was the Savitz one, right? Where
it's pretty cool.
It only had three minions. It only had Elik, and it was Emperor and Yogg, right? So anytime you got Elik, you were guaranteed to get either Emperor or Yogg, like on the draw, like 90% or something. You know, something crazy, right? Really high, because your opponent is probably not going to draw higher than that. But this one has like Savannah High Mains and Azure Drakes, particularly Azure Drake. Like, why the Azure Drake? Just to get an extra, just to get there's to that three damage.
There's a lot of spells in the deck, and it makes sense because it's also card draw. So it kind of operates like a miracle deck. I actually took this idea from JJ. He was also playing this, but he played So I was like, "Oh, this is a cool deck. Let's try it." You know, and. You need to have, like, the thing I realized with the deck, like, lock and load is not really that strong unless you have Emperored your cards, because usually you only get to play, like, one or two or three spells at best. Two is enough for it to be valuable, and three is really good, but you never go over that line, it feels like. So a lot of times it just sits in your hand. You have to use your spells early to survive. And then you will have, in mid-late game, you will have a weak lock and load. Unless you have Emperored your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels kind of, the lock and load card feels kind of weak to me. That's the only weak point, I feel like.
So you feel kind of locked
so
sometimes.
The lock and load deck's weak card is the lock and load.
Yes.
Some messed up about that show. I noticed that the Hunter's Mark's not in this deck, and a lot of times when you're building a lock and load deck, I feel like you do have to go heavy defense, right? And given that Hunter's Mark's so cheap too, why take that out?
The idea was I cleared the small stuff with Power Shot, Unleash, Bow, my own minions, and then have Deadly Shot. So instead of having a combo where I need both Unleash and Hunter's Mark, I would only need the Deadly Shot for the big guys, and no one plays big guys now anyways, except like the 7/7 shaman card. And you just need to clear... Basically, you need to clear the board. And you can deadly shot it, and then you win.
Hmm. Okay. JJ
But I feel like one Hunter's Mark could be good. You have Unleash already. Like explosive traps.
Yeah.
Power shot.
God, you got 5 traps in this, baby. Yes. Yeah, Bo's definitely good in it. JJ, sounds like you've played it some, too. What do you think?
Oh, it's so funny, dude.
Funny or so fun?
Fun. It's fun. It's fun.
Okay,
dude.
Okay.
Actually, it's like one of the most fun decks I've played for a while. It's so good. The best thing is when you actually stacked a lot of lock and loads on each other and you get two.
Oh, yes. You get the double. Spell. I love that, dude.
Oh, baby. You just start jamming these spells, get 2 cards every time, you're like double Call of the Wild, bam, and you just go on this warrior's face. It's so good. It's so fun. It's actually super cool.
Yeah, I love it when I get Acid Maw and then just crazy shit just starts happening on the board. That card is
Acid Maw power shot.
exactly, right? Definitely a lot of fun. And then Yogg, you just play as right into Yogg. But, I mean, Yogg, I feel like in this deck is more of just that miracle out, or you know, just a little bit of a feather in your cap, or something like in your sleeve, just to eke out a win sometimes, because you know, like I guess it, like we were saying before, the Hunter package is just good, right? In terms of tempo and just damage to the face and working, you know, just working classes down that don't have any life gain. So how is Yogg, like has Yogg been a huge factor in this deck for you guys?
Yeah, Yogg has been amazing. It's always amazing. It feels like it's, when I played it, it's very rare that it's like really bad to me.
That's
the feeling I get when I play against it too. Like Yogg is just amazing. You have to embrace it. If you haven't already, do it.
I have to craft
Wow, Show is saying if you haven't embraced Yogg, this is crazy.
I have to craft it golden, I feel like. My Yogg is always fireballing my face. I don't know, man.
Yeah. Oh, did you see like Tyler's stream at the end of the day? Like he got a very high rank with today, and he was like, "Oh, I'm losing. Let's play Yogg." Oh, I won the game. Like that happens like every fucking time.
That's funny,
dude. That's life right there. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it comes down to literally this turn. Either I lose next turn to my opponent, or I just play Yogg and have a small, you know, has a chance to at least win, and then something amazing happens. Like you heal for like 15 or something.
It's so cool.
It's just crazy. But yeah, this card, I think still for the most part, is one of the most powerful cards in the old gods collection. So still up there between Nazoth and Yogg, which one's more powerful? Me and Noxious always take this poll.
Yogg.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
More. It's the instant impact because like, mm-hmm. and Zoth would be better if your minions would get charged, but Yogg basically has kind of charge, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, definitely try this out, guys. And again, for those of you listening, I can just do a quick rundown of it. It has Azure Drake. That's two Savannah High mains. It's got two snipes. No freezing traps. Just no Hunter's Mark. So otherwise, it's pretty close to just some of the other Lock and Load decks that you've seen out there. But I'm definitely going to try this out right after the show. It's going to be fun. All right, so the last one we have is one from me. So hold on to your butts. And it's still my quest to come up with something in Priest, because friggin' Ben Brodes just has to throw out some kind of, I don't know if it's troll or not, but basically alluding that there's some kind of Priest deck that I feel like, or he mentioned that we just may not have discovered yet, because
what the fuck is that?
So anyways, I was coming up with something. It's just a Dragon Nazoth deck.
Just a Dragon Nazoth deck.
It's very minion heavy. So it's not unlike the normal Priest where you have like a lot of removal cards, you know, like just two circles and two soul priests and whatever it is, man, excavating evil and all that stuff. I was just going down this route just to try and climbing slowly with it. I mean, it definitely climbs, but look at you, man, screw you, man. Any thoughts on just general Dragon and Nazoth?
Yeah, very cool.
I tried it myself. It feels like it's very powerful. Like, it can beat any control.
Right.
Against Warrior, you can go to Fatigue easily. But, right. Feels like it's just, it misses something. Either AoE.
Well, it's definitely, if you fall, it's like one of those decks where you fall behind, right? It's really tough to catch up.
Yeah, you fall behind and you lose, right?
Yeah, but the biggest thing about it is just the Dragon package is just the only package that actually has decent early drops for Priest. So I figured, you know, just doing something like that, and it's pretty easy just to add a few, you know, Nazoth with even just Karen and Sylvanas is really good. You know what I mean? So and just having some kind of end game, because Priest just generally just doesn't have a good end game at this point. So just trying some things out. It's not necessarily good, guys, but I'm just trying some different things out to see if there is some way of completing a Priest deck without having to use too many cards on removal. And that's always been the biggest issue. It's just like Priest is almost forced to be passive in a way, given a lot of its package.
Shade is actually a really
good stats. Shifting.
It's also fun. Yeah. Same with rogue cards. Like that you can get a random card from your opponent.
Yeah, the Huckster.
Adds so much more interesting situation.
Burgle, dude.
Yeah, Burgle. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, Shifting Shades is definitely a lot of fun. And the timing of it, too, because like by the end of the game, there's always, I feel like there's always some kind of key card that, or just some key card that comes up from the Shifting, because you get four of them a lot of times, which is pretty amazing. I couldn't fit in Curator, though. Curator is too slow for this type of deck, at least. But I don't know. Just something to try out, guys. It's not necessarily good, but again, if somebody can come up with a priest, like JJ, can you come up with a priest deck that works? Is it possible for you to?
I don't know how Seta does it, man. This guy is just a masochist or something. It's so crazy, man. I think they just don't want it to work.
They don't want it to work. Oh, man. It's brutal.
What about the Khatun priests?
Khatun priests? I played some of that, too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can use it to, like, hard counter aggro, but against control, you get smashed.
Yeah, exactly. The warrior one's just so much better. And even the druid one's better, right? But Entomb's so good, man. Entomb, oh, man. Basically, against any control deck, you just win right now, at least with priests. Unfortunately, there's just not many control decks, which sucks.
And so Paladin is dead. That was the biggest... disappointment. Like
that's
I was
true,
so
that's true.
But then it was just
yeah, that's true. That's
it looks
true.
So good on paper actually, but it's not good.
Paladin paper. Paladin Azoth, you mean, or
yeah, Paladin Azoth. That was like the tier one deck in the beginning, right?
Yeah,
and everyone was hyped about.
Yeah, Paladin's definitely lacking some. I mean, it's just lacking a finish at this point. You know, like the Murloc finish is gone now, but the healing's still awesome. I still think those tools are still really good for Paladin. But at the bottom, once again, is the Priest and Paladin. This was like a year and a half ago or something like that.
And Paladin had its peak.
Yeah, they deserve you know, going down to the bottom. But priests don't deserve it. Priests don't deserve it, right? Okay, well, why don't we take some questions here, and we'll. If you guys want to tweet some questions, tweet it to me at ChamMV, or you can tweet some in the chat here. Okay, so all the ones on Twitter are pretty much just more troll. If you got a good question for these guys, let me know in the Twitch chat. Let me see. Somebody says Shifting Shade sucks so much. You just haven't gotten good cards from it yet, man. Where's Ray Noodle? Oh, yeah, so Ray and Noxious, they're so Noxious is in China right now. He's at Star Ladder, and Ray still, I want him to get kind of acclimated back to just hours, because he just got back from Turkey, so didn't want him to be super tired on the show and all that good stuff. So hopefully they'll be back next week, though. They should be back. Okay. Nazoth Pally missing a finish. Well, guys, Nazoth Pally obviously has some type of finish, but with things like Warriors and stuff like that out there, I mean, Brawl, the Nazoth finish isn't so as powerful as it used to be. How good is Dragon Warrior? We already answered that. All right, come on, some good questions, or we're going to call it a show. Dragon Warrior list, please. You can go on literally.
Don't post the list. They will play it. Don't encourage them to play it.
Don't encourage them to play it.
It's so easy and so good.
Oh, man. Okay, here you go. The Man Child. Do you think they should update bad classic class legendaries like Valen and Crush? Seems kind of shitty in those cards that those cards don't see much play. I don't think so. At this point, I would have said yes, like, I don't know, a year or two ago, but now I'm just like, yeah, it's okay to have bad legends. We have lots of bad legends, actually. And Valen might have potential in the future, though. I could still see that card being viable in some way.
Valen was actually a thing. The Burst Priest, that was a thing in the beginning, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
God.
I mean, Embrace the Shadows, I felt like that was what it was for, was, you know, maybe get an Emperor somewhere and draw out a Priest deck and then just Embrace the Shadows for, I don't know how much damage it was, something crazy.
Maybe it's just not found yet, but I really wasn't able to build something like that.
It's hard to draw with Priest. Like, just draw out your deck, you know, like a miracle.
Yeah. See, if you have to really just get this Pyro Cleric combo, sometimes with Acolyte Rogues, but pretty hard.
Decks that relies on combos are, it's not consistent enough. Same with, like, Paladin. Like, the Ensign Paladin relies on the quality combo.
Priest just needs a class card like Deathlord with really high health, and maybe we can do something.
Yes, that would be nice.
Or, yeah, more proactive stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Or proactive Priest would be great.
Proactive Priest, exactly. That's kind of what Dragon is, right? That's the only thing. It's just kind of boring, unfortunately. All right, let's see. Another Super JJ Ancho. What do you guys think about the current state of Secret Paladin? I made a Secret Paladin guide a couple weeks ago. What are your thoughts about the deck?
My thought about Secret Paladin, I think it's like the problem is like the secrets which are there now without Avenge is like way too weak. Mm-hmm. And also the Paladin lost all of the like. Secret Paladin will always be, it will not be a value deck since the Challenger thins out your deck too much, right, for that. Mm-hmm. And you just, I don't think you can either out-tempo anyone or just out-value anyone. I tried it a bit to play it, and it felt kind of hard to build up the early aggression or the mid-range pressure you actually need. If you win with this deck, I feel like you sometimes, if you curve into Tyrion, it's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel it's too weak.
Yeah, that's it. Like pretty much you hit the nail on the coffin there. The Mysterious Challenger on its own is not as impactful anymore.
Yeah.
And the early game is like complete. It feels like it's just so much weaker, but also like the other decks has become weak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of.
If you.
Works to some extent, but I don't think it's like a tier 1 deck. Like, I know the Finnish player brought it to well with it, I think.
Wow.
What? Ursi. Yeah, check his Twitter list of it. He's been doing okay with it, I think.
Definitely catch you by surprise. I mean, nobody's going to expect it, for sure.
Price is on your favor.
Yeah, if you want to play Secret Paladin, play Wild, guys. I mean, it's crazy strong right now in Wild. Lots of interesting decks that are
people
strong.
People playing Wild, lol.
Golly, man, jeez, it's fun. Have you played any Wild, JJ? Any of it?
Not a single game.
Then what are you commenting on it? Golly.
Fuck this format.
All right, Chaos AE asks, what matchup does C'Thun Warrior have that are better than Dragon Warrior? Joe, lay it out.
It's probably better against Midrange Shaman. Midrange Shaman is matchup for you. But lately, the Midrange Shamans has become more greedy. Before, they were kind of in between a mid-range control shaman shell in an aggro shell, something in between. But now they have become more greedy, so I don't think it's that good anymore.
Mm. All right.
It's hard to say. Well, Freeze Mage is obviously better.
Yeah,
that's always going to
be
your best matchup with so much heal. What is probably Sue is better as C'Thun Warrior. But Priest loses to.
That's about all the decks that are popular on ladder. So I think that's good coverage right there. Okay, so Absolute Zero says, okay, so he's talking about the whole legendary just not having being a big deal. So I think his point was that some classes have good legendaries or good classic legendaries. So in the classic set, and some have terrible ones. And obviously, Crush and Valen were his examples. I see your point. I mean, it is, for folks that I guess only have access to those, I mean, those are going to be the consistent legends, right? Those aren't going to be rotated out. But you know what, Hunter, as much as Crush sucks, they've got awesome epic ones, though. They've got amazing epic cards, so they make up for it from that standpoint. Definitely some balance there. Nothing's better than Savannah High Main. I mean, the epic card, I don't think there's anything better than Savannah High Main in any of the classes, right? Like, can you think of anything?
It's harsh.
Yeah. Maybe a couple more here. What do you think has caused, so Lethal Static, what do you think has caused the downturn in Invitationals? Yeah, what do you guys think?
It's mainly from the Blizzard, the World Tour Champ. I think tournaments are kind of orienting on the BlizzCon format, right? So
this is how it goes.
So
for those of you not familiar with that, you have to have qualifiers. Like it has to be open to a degree. Yeah. Actually, it has to be completely open, right? It can't even be to a degree. I think it has to be.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you don't get points, and it's not Blizzard confirmed, and that's just a huge problem for organizers, I think.
Yeah.
But the latest one, the Xfinity one, that was pretty good, though, I think.
Yeah, but it's just like, well, how do we do these events when we have like so many other events in between which are Blizzard approved and stuff? Like, when do we do these events?
I guess it's trying to attract the players.
Mm-hmm. Who does them then if they already... That's the thing, right? So they will change, like the Xfinity is like... Yeah, it's actually one since a while, right?
Yeah, that was the first one in like...
Yeah. Definitely the first one in a long time.
I don't know where the Hearthstone's... It's kind of... This is also a big thing, right? It's changing so much at the moment. I can't really say.
I don't know. Personally, I think there's a big opportunity to do some more invitations again. I've even had thoughts of doing one, but just haven't had time to get around to planning one. But
what was the name of the invitation you had in the early stages?
Deck Wars. Nice. I used to do Deck Wars, right?
That was really fun. Actually.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There have been multiple players that have asked me to bring it back. Actually, so you know, I definitely have had thoughts of bringing it back. But it's so funny because back then it was just like everybody, it was just too much of it wasn't actually a problem back when Deck Wars was there, but everybody was complaining about Invitationals and just too much of that. And it's like the complete opposite now. It's just what a crazy world this is. But it's never viewership. You're going to get the best viewership, guys, if you have people that a lot of folks know. So it's so bizarre. Like HCT points shouldn't matter to some degree in terms of views and sponsors and stuff like that. It's interesting, definitely interesting. So yeah, hopefully we will see some more. Definitely. If not, I don't know. I'll have to do one very soon. Let's see what else here. Anything else that's interesting? What about Yogi Control Warrior? Okay, this is the last.
That's a dumb idea, actually. Card is broken, man.
I tried, but
you don't want to draw cards in Control Warrior, right? Like
that's not true.
In the Dune Warrior, you want to draw cards.
Yeah, Cthune Warrior. Because
the person who does the Brand Plus
Doomcaller
wins usually.
Yeah.
Cannot stop that. Even if you're like you cannot win through fatigue.
Yeah, it's true. Okay. Well, I think we'll be seeing some Yogg-Saron on on Show's deck even more on even Control Wars. Interesting. Oh, here's one about Rogue. One last one. JJ, is there any type of minion based rogues like where you just fight for board type of thing that's not Miracle that you've been trying? I guess maybe Nazoth. I'll just add that to it.
You can try Cthune Rogue. It's more minion based.
Oh, we had that. We didn't look at that. Oh, we were supposed to look at that, right? Where's that Cthune Rogue?
You can look at it. It's pretty amazing, actually. Like if you want to have fun, play. It's pretty. It's like, dude, do you have the list?
Yeah, I have it. I got it.
Send it to you.
Here you go. No, I got it.
It's like a bit more proactive. I'm building still. Pretty fun, this is a priest list.
Oh, whoops, sorry, it's the wrong. No, this is it.
Oh, you have it? Okay, yeah. There it is. The finisher is basically you go like Bran into Shadowcast, so you get like two other Brans, and you can go like, and you can go, it's super fun against controllers.
That's crazy. Okay.
When you go like Bran into Blade of Cthune just on some big minion, you have your Cthune like plus 15, plus 15 or bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go, you get coins from the pillagers as well. Sometimes you can go like brand to coin, cartoon, I just domed a controller for 80 with that or something. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, that blade of Cthune is, I remember when we first heard about it, I thought it was going to be pretty powerful.
Try it out. The deck
it's
is
really
not,
good.
It's not too weak. You can actually try it, and it's actually super fun because like something a deck to look. I'm just still like trying to make it better, and maybe I can actually make it better, but yeah, we'll see. I like it. It's cool.
Yeah, those of you that can't see it and you're just listening on audio, it's got kind of the auctioneer draw package with two auctioneers. It has the Cthune package with the Beckoners and the Disciples. Only one Cthune's chosen. And then it has the Emperor and the one blade and one Cthune at the end, too. So it's got Van Cleef there, too. What do you think, Sho? Look kind of cool?
Looks cool, but it always lacks the problem. Like, if you're going to try to do a control row, if you look at all the cards, there is no defensive healing card.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Something like this. That's the problem, I feel.
Yeah.
Always.
I feel sad, but Rogue should have something.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's sad, right? It takes all the control options away from Rogue. You just get face smashed.
Forced to play Reno, and then you have to play one of each good card, and it feels bad too, you know?
Yeah, it's so bad. This makes me sad. It feels bad, man.
All right, well, give that a try too, guys. Let us know how that goes, and gosh, that Shadowcaster brand, oh man, I didn't even think of that. That would be pretty sweet.
Do it, man.
Yeah, but that's going to be it, guys, for the show. It's a good one, man. That's definitely great to have you guys on to hang out. And, it's been a little while for... Actually, Sho, it's been a while since you've been on, but JJ, maybe a few months. But any shout-outs you guys want to do before taking off? JJ, you want to start off?
Shout-outs to all the Twitch community, Kalprite, and to my team, of course, Complexity. Same as to my practice partners. Thank you so much, guys, for making this all possible.
Awesome. Sho, how about you?
Yeah, thanks to my team, Team Liquid, supporting me. And all the viewers, I guess, that supports us and makes this possible for everyone. You guys, you're the one that makes it possible in the first place. So thank you, guys. And thank you, Shanna, for having me.
Yeah, of course. And again, thank the two of you guys for doing the show and all the folks for watching today. I know it's a different time slot and everything. It's kind of last minute, guys, just because it's just one of those weeks where you just have to get the stuff together kind of last minute. So we're going to be going back to... We might be going back to the regular time. I'll have to let you guys know. Well, we might switch just a little bit for the summer because our summer schedules are a little bit crazy. But I will let you know. Definitely on Wednesdays, though. We're not switching days or anything like that. So definitely stay tuned for that. And I will get the audios up. Audios are usually about 24 hours. iTunes has been having some weird issues, guys, with updating the feeds. So definitely tweet me if you're still having some issues, and I'll look into it or maybe suggest something for you to try. VODs will be up probably an hour afterwards, maybe a little bit after that. So tune in if you missed any of the show. And just spread the word, about the show. And folks that may not know about the show, you can support the show at our Patreon, too. We actually have a Patreon at patreon.com/valuetown if you enjoy the show and want to do that. And we just to give a quick shout-out to some of those folks, Jacob Perez, Paul Hatchman, Eric Lynn, Josh Silvestri, Keith McLaughlin, Andrew Parent, Shane Sherman, and CJ Hines, just to name a few of the patrons that we have. Thanks so much for supporting the show. And then iTunes, too, if you want to if you don't have the money and just want to support by just leaving a 5-star review, that helps a lot when folks are trying to find the podcast itself. We have a lot of audio listeners, too. So you can just a big shout out to Squid Attack for the last 5-star review. Really appreciate that, too. You can find it on Android, too, Google Podcast, music podcast there, too. That's going to be it, though, for Valuetown this week. So for Super JJ's show and myself, Chan Man V, we'll see you next time.